Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to learn how ashwagandha, the herb, can be used to improve sleep quality and relieve stress from Patel University School of Medicine in India. That's important. That was published in the Vendetta Institute of Medical Sciences. Also from the University of Westminster in the United Kingdom, omega-3 supplementation may reduce muscle soreness after exercising. That's good. From Seoul National University in South Korea, higher intake of carotenoid, the beta-cryptoxanthin, will lower your risk of osteoporosis. That's very important. And then from the Netherlands University, as well as the Virginia Commonwealth University, being male, being overweight, and being depressed will definitely put you on the wrong side of aging. It means you're going to age quicker, die sooner. I'll explain that to you in depth. Also today, we're going to be looking at two issues that are important. One is from a Dr. Charlie Ward, medical doctor, and Charlie says, hey, you're being played 100% on the COVID debacle. All right, we told you this about 9 months ago, that we were being played. Every single thing that I've shared with you back then and subsequent to that has been found to be accurate. We're adding to that today. I have new information that I'm going to be sharing on the latest scientific studies on vitamin D. It's amazing the numbers of people that whose lives can be saved who would be prevented from going into a hospital or critical care or ICU if they had enough vitamin D in their body. Therefore, I'm recommending this audience to do a call to action. Contact your legislators explaining that the peer-reviewed PubMed scientific literature has many studies showing vitamin D could help with COVID-19 prevention. Also, there's a comedian who has turned kind of a social commentator. I think he has some very good insights because he kind of blends his unique sarcasm with his insights, Russell Brand. Russell Brand today on framing the issues, because who controls everything? Well, and by the way, on tomorrow evening's Progressive Commentary Hour, I have the leading documentarian from Germany who has finished two major documentaries on Wikipedia. And he is really outraged by Wikipedia. And they brought a lawsuit in Germany and won. Yes, they won a lawsuit in Germany, won two. And yet the person they won against is still on Wikipedia, still out there thrashing about. How's that possible? You're going to learn a lot about Wikipedia you did not know after tomorrow. So those are issues, but I have one larger issue I'd like to address. And then throughout the program, if you desire to answer it, please call 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888, and share your insights. This is our talkback question of the day. Oh, by the way, I forgot to mention sometimes, but you never know when you're out and about, you need to be away from your computer, away from a land-based radio. So here's a number you can call and listen to this program live. So write down the number, please. It is, let's see, it's the live number 774-337-6033, 774-337-6033. Now, yesterday I was writing a commentary that I'll be sharing on tomorrow's program. And I took a break, and I do a little exercising, push-ups, sit-ups, deep knee bends, for about 5 minutes. I do them quickly. They're called a power workout. They're short, but they're high burst of energy, and that helps you. It's actually better than a long, slower exercise. And I turn on the television, I wanted to see what was being offered on one of the channels. And there's a program called, I think it's called Carnival Eats. It's about a person that goes to a carnival and tries out all these dishes. It's been decades since I've been to a carnival, so I'm not familiar with it firsthand. And the first one that I saw him do was a man who was obese, who was talking about how he had just, you know, was fighting stage 4 colorectal cancer with some chemotherapies. But then immediately jumped to the subject of his specialty meal and what he was known for. 4 slices of white bread with 7 layers of cheese, 2 big hamburger patties, and I think there was bacon. And then that's, and some caramelized onions. A huge sandwich. I mean, I'm guessing 7-8 inches high. And he was eating this and how good it was. Oh, this is just delicious. And then he was giving it to people outside. All of this is great. I can taste the cheeses and I can taste the, you know, the meat, etc. No irony. That fella, you have stage 4 cancer. You're dying. Do you ever think that maybe this is one of the contributing factors? But then I decided to keep watching. And every single dish there was something that would, that no one in this audience, I'm sure, would even try, even those of you who sneak occasionally, because these were just over the top bad. And it showed people making their own homemade ice cream, but look at the sugar and look at the other ingredients. They were making a peach wrapped in dough, and all this stuff was bad. There was not a single ingredient in a single item that was healthy. And yet, this is what people go for. It's like going to the movies. You ever wonder, doesn't anybody eat a meal before they go to the movies? Everybody's lining up to get all this crap. And without any thought that maybe this is going to cause my sinuses or allergies or immune system to be defective, especially at a time when we really should be paying attention. So here is the question I'm going to ask you, and you can answer it in your own way. When I began my career and started promoting vegetarianism, veganism was too radical to talk with people about, so I talked about vegetarianism. Even that was considered too radical. Only about 2% of the American population were vegetarians, and then half of those were not healthy vegetarians. If you ate, for example, if you ate bread and pretzels and potato chips and french fries and with an iceberg lettuce salad, that was considered being a vegetarian. Today, it's still under 5%. 5%. That's vegetarian. It's not vegan. Vegan's about 3%. So when you go into a city like Los Angeles, you'll find a few really good vegan restaurants. New York has a few, not a lot. Half have gone out of business in the last year and a half, 2 years. Younger people are the primary people who support it. And even those, I wouldn't say, had the best food. I've eaten in them. I might eat one dish because the rest are deep fried or tempura. So even being a vegan today doesn't mean that you're a healthy vegan. And yet the science, the actual peer-reviewed science, and I had to collect all this for this study I just finished, this anti-aging study, I had to prove scientifically to a whole group of scientists, anti-aging scientists, that every single thing in the protocol had solid scientific proof that it worked. For example, if I gave you 12 glasses of juice a day, which I did, every single ingredient had to be proven to have science behind it. 5 studies per ingredient, every meal, which was different every day. 5 studies for every ingredient. If I use 7 herbs, all 7 herbs. So I had to have over 100 studies proving that a vegan, healthy vegan diet would extend the lifespan and lengthen the telomeres and allow you to overcome diseases and prevent diseases, which I did. I had room to spare there. So with all this information readily available, it's not a secret, it's not hidden. Why is it, in your opinion, that Americans today are doing almost everything against their best interest? Not just with diet. That's a very easy example. When when 65% of all adults are overweight and or obese, and we have over 200 million cases of disease in a country of 331 million people, including diseases in children. But look at the mistakes they're making. Texas is one good example, where they were completely unprepared. Now, I was prepared because 3 weeks before the storm, we bought another generator. Now, here's the key. If you have a generator and the generator is above ground, so if there's a flood, it's not going to be washed out. And if there's a tornado, at least you protect it. The easiest, very inexpensive, you build a cinder block wall around it with rebar, that's steel rods, then you pour the concrete in it and nothing gets through it. 200-mile-an-hour wind won't get through it. So you're protecting your one asset that's going to give you electricity. With electricity, your water pump is going, because that's electric, and you're going to have water. If it's freezing, you'll have a drip going, so therefore nothing freezes. You can also have cycle, let's say, with propane. That's probably the most reasonable and responsible, but that would mean digging a hole and burying a propane tank, let's say a 1,000-gallon propane tank, then covering it up. And that means that for the next, 3 months, you can be without any electricity and you'll have electricity from the propane, because that also can fuel your cooking and any gas in the house. But you use a combination of both if you're really wise. Neither are expensive. It takes a little effort. The one generator cost about $820. That was it, to run a whole house. Then you put it on cycles, 4 hours on, 4 hours off. Why? Because you get your water and you get your refrigeration and your freezer are keeping everything cold or frozen. You use it so you don't run out. And then you have 2 50-gallon barrels that you have for either your gasoline or whatever other fuel, diesel, that you're going to use. Diesel's you're going to get a lot more time to use it. You don't just turn on a generator and walk away, because you're going to burn up the fuel in it in about an hour and a half, 2 hours. In any case, reasonable things you could do. Storing frozen food, freeze-drying food. And by the way, a year ago, if you wanted a freeze dryer, you could get one in a couple days. Now it's a year to a year and a half wait. You heard me correct. And when people are out of food, they're going to be out of food. They'll get food in. But then where does the next batch come from? Remember, once they use up all the existing food in their supply chain, you just don't go out and make a peach or a head of lettuce or some almonds. You have to wait till those grow. So we're going to go through some substantial food shortages, especially with, and this is what immediately was gone, and I mean every store you went to, you could find no meat, no dairy, no bread, all gone, no eggs. But for vegans, it was easier, because people generally don't buy grains because they don't know what to do with them. So yeah, there was all kinds of grains, but nobody buying the grains. Isn't it ironic? So that's just one example of lacking common sense, lacking motivation, lacking getting out of the comfort zone to say, hey, what if? And then planning, what if? But also look at what we're doing wrong politically. Everything. Doesn't matter whether you're Democrat or Republican. What are we doing economically? Everything. Oh, look at that. Look at that. Artificial intelligence has made this. Hey, that's terrific. I got to buy that. But it's going to take away your job. I'm not going to think that deeply. And automation is going to take away 60 to 80 million jobs in the next 4 years. Oh, but don't confuse me with that. And where are you living? You're living in non-sustainable environments. How often do you say, wow, our house could be burned down this year in California and in Oklahoma, Washington State, Oregon, and yet you're not moving? So you see, any place you look today, almost every choice we make is an inappropriate choice. Why? Why is it only about 5 to 7% of the American population are actually making healthy choices and positive choices. That means 93 to 95% of all Americans are making bad choices about everything all the time. And no irony. And then acting like a victim. I'd like you to address that, please. 888-874-4888, and I'll take your calls in about 15 minutes. So let's go over to the good news on health. Ashwagandha, A-S-H-W-A-G-A-N-D-H-A, according to this study, will help you improve your quality of sleep as well as relieve stress. And this was a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled study to determine the effects of ashwagandha root extract in patients with insomnia and anxiety. They took 300 milligrams a day, and the other group got the placebo, and made a huge difference. So, ashwagandha, better sleep, less stress. Now, on the omega-3 fatty acid study, done at the University of Westminster, they found that taking omega-3 fatty acids can help reduce muscle soreness after exercise. So that's good. Now, if you took the omega-3 with magnesium at 1,000 milligrams, you can help fibromyalgia, arthritis pain, headaches, sore back also. And from Seoul National University, when you take in the carotenoid beta, and it's called cryptoxanthin, then you can lower your osteoporosis risk. So that's important. So just as simple, and it's inexpensive, easy, it's a carotenoid, the beta carotenoid. All right? And we have a lot of osteoporosis in the United States. And also, finally, from the Netherlands and the Virginia Commonwealth, scientists are using biology to more accurately measure how quickly humans age. One factor is the length of an individual's telomeres. Now, telomeres and stretches of DNA and proteins at the ends of our chromosomes shorten as we age. So, in effect, we have an epigenetic clock. Meanwhile, if you look at the changes in the gene function that do not make alterations to the genetic code, or genome. Another aging clock is based on transcriptomes, a collection of all the genes readouts in a cell. And scientists are able to measure age with these what are called bolomics. And so what it's showing is that, and this was published in eLife, a peer-reviewed journal, that when you're overweight, you're speeding up the telomeres shortening process. When you're depressed, you really speed it up. Depressed people are killing themselves because they're shortening their telomeres. Both have to be dealt with. We're dealing with neither on any level in the United States except some of these marketing plans. Oh, how am I going to lose weight? Well, here's a plan we're going to send you the free. Look at the food they're sending you. You could lose weight, but that's not rebuilding health. Those are pro-inflammatory items they're sending you. They're not rich in phytonutrients, and polyphenols, antioxidants. But just to lose weight, that seems to be the goal. No, you can lose weight and still be extremely unhealthy. So if you're a male and you want to knock 5 or 10 years off your lifespan, stay overweight and stay depressed, and that's the outcome. So therefore, we should be focusing upon how to deal with depression and deal with telomeres. And I'm going to deal with both. Later this week, I'm going to do a classroom on the air, about a half hour, on lengthening your telomeres and overcoming depression and anxiety naturally. I'm Gary Nall. We're 20 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, I'm going to take some calls. I'm told we got some calls. Good. All right, why Americans are not changing in spite of everything they're doing works against them. Why? And we're going to take those calls. Then I'm going to go to a physician talking about, quote, we've been played 100%. Please stay with us.
You are being played. Do you understand what's happening? You are absolutely being played. Less than a month ago, on Inauguration Day, the World Health Organization, after conferring with the United States CDC, came out with a twofold directive in order to have less false positive tests regarding COVID-19. Throughout 2020, doctors and hospitals and clinics had been encouraged, if not pressured, to make the diagnosis of COVID-19 if we thought it was probable or presumed. We didn't have to have a positive test. And the symptoms were extremely broad-based. Cough, low-grade fever, shortness of breath. We see that a lot with colds, with allergy seasons, certainly with influenza. But that's all we needed to diagnose COVID-19. And that's why you saw influenza numbers plummet in March of 2020. So on Inauguration Day, the World Health Organization came out and said, one, physicians and hospitals and clinics should make certain that a patient with symptoms consistent with COVID-19 needs to have a positive test matched up to that syndrome of symptoms in order to diagnose COVID-19. Well, you know what's going to happen. That's going to eliminate a lot of the cases. Because no longer is it going to be enough to look at a patient that's got a cough or low-grade fever and say, well, you've got COVID. Now it's got to be symptoms consistent with a positive test. The other thing that the World Health Organization was strongly encouraging was PCR testing should no longer be running at cycle thresholds at 40, 44, 45. It should be reduced into the realm of what we normally would use. Understanding that PCR was never created to diagnose a viral disease. It was created for an entirely different purpose, but we've been using it to diagnose COVID-19, and we've been abusing it because we've been running the cycle so many times that in some studies, it was projected that possibly 85% of the positive PCR tests were false positives. Such that 1,000 people being told that they have COVID-19, it was likely that less than 200 of them actually had COVID-19. So there you have it. Two things happened on Inauguration Day that were virtually guaranteed to lower the number of cases of COVID-19. Was it politically motivated? Can we trust politicians and appointed bureaucrats? We've seen Governor Newsom out of California say, the CDC says we can open up the schools and we don't have to have teachers vaccinated in order to do so safely. We've seen New York leaders say the same thing. We've seen Governor Cuomo come out and say, well, if we don't open stuff up now, there won't be anything to open up when we finally do. All right. I think I've heard that before. We're seeing data previously distorted willingly now being told, don't do that. I have been saying this for darn near a year, and I am disgusted with the kind of treatment the American people are getting. The fact of the matter is, we should have our schools open. You're going to see governors now sort of pandering to the public opinion, and they're going to do things, and they're going to boast and run victory laps that they didn't earn, because what they did do and the damage they did cause shouldn't have happened, but it did. And on Inauguration Day, finally, there were a couple of steps taken to rectify an unbelievably corrupt set of diagnostic criteria by which to make the diagnosis of COVID-19. And another thing, we're seeing a remarkable drop in the percentage of...
Okay, what he is saying is absolutely correct. If you don't understand the science behind this, I'm publishing an article in depth on it because some people are confused about what it means, a PCR test. What it is simply an amplification. Now, there's an hour and 50-minute interview, filmed interview I did with the man who won the Nobel Prize in 1993 in science for discovering the PCR, and Kerry Mullis, Dr. Kerry Mullis. and he says, do not use this ever as a diagnostic tool because it can't tell you which virus you're looking at. So let's just say that they're currently in the United States, and it's not uniform. They are using like 40, 45 amplifications, meaning they keep making the pictures bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger till they can actually see a particle of a virus, not even seeing the whole virus, particle. Then they try to match its genome. All right. There's nothing in the world that's going to happen to you at that point. You're not sick. This is not a viral attack. You're not a case. And that's a vast majority of people. It's probably 90% or more of the people who've been diagnosed are completely healthy, and it's a false test with false outcome, and they know it. How do they know it? Let me give you an example. This is from today, quote, how the CDC misled on COVID vaccine efficacy. The CDC wrongly stated on its website that Pfizer's COVID vaccine was highly effective in people previously infected with the virus. It took multiple calls to the CDC and more than a month before the agency finally corrected the error. But the new language is still misleading. Quote, and a scientist, Thomas Massey, looked into whether he should get a COVID-19 vaccine since he'd already had the infection. Uncovering research that showed vaccination offered no benefits, zero benefits, if you've had COVID. Anyone who'd been previously infected didn't help you at all. In a high-profile report issued by the CDC's Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, 15 scientists stated that the Pfizer COVID vaccine had, quote, consistently high efficacy of 92% or more among people with evidence of previous SARS infection, meaning if you previously had the infection, oh, then you had a 92% effective rate. That was all lies, all lies. Because the CDC statement is wrong and there's no efficacy demonstrated in Pfizer or Moderna's trials among participants with evidence of previous infections. It took all that effort, but now the CDC has had to correct that. Now, do you think that they told the world, hey, we got it wrong about the efficacy? No. It's nonstop misinformation. And why don't you take a look at the financial backing and the financial conflicts of interest in the 15 scientists stating that it had a 92% efficacy rate. That's just one example. Also, this is from Dr. Merrill Nass, NASS. I interviewed her back in 1991. I did a series of interviews with her. I filmed her for Gulf War Syndrome, Killing Her Own, where we proved that, and I went to Congress. I spoke with senators and legislators and about these were completely healthy soldiers who got a series of vaccines. They were not told which vaccines they got. They could not refuse. And the experimental botulism and experimental anthrax were amongst the vaccines they got. Plus, they got an adjuvant. And they got sick. Now, it wasn't from being in the Gulf, because many of these people were sick immediately after getting the vaccine stateside. Although others got sick while they were on ships in the Navy. Some in the Air Force. Now, mind you, they were never in combat, so they couldn't have gotten what others did get, which was exposed to biological and chemical weapons that Schwarzkopf and others denied existed. They lied. It did exist. In any case, because I interviewed the people, I got film that showed a weapons depot being exploded, and you see this donut-looking cloud going up that's yellow and orange. That's the biological weapons. And all the soldiers are standing around just looking at it, unprotected. And then the next day, they came down with bleeding noses and blood coming out of their eyes and coughing up blood. And yet in come the guys in white suits and start bulldozing all that away and saying, this never happened. That's our government. That's the nature of our government then and now. Merrill Nass helped expose that. She was one of the first. There was a doctor at MD Anderson who also said that the vaccine they got had a never-before-seen biological weapon in it. And I interviewed him as well. Here's what Merrill Nass has to say. Quote, over and over, we have been hoaxed. Quote, it is difficult for me to believe that 2/3 of the U.S., according to a Harris poll, are favorably inclined to the pharmaceutical industry, up 30% points since January, just before the pandemic. Do you believe it? Who do you trust, common sense or the media's experts? Surely most Americans have by now figured out that almost everything they are being told about COVID by the experts, the government, and the media is untrue. Haven't they noticed how the stories changed with the wind? That most of them simply make no sense? Masking. Wear no mask. One mask. Two masks. Oh, and add some pantyhose to get that tight fit. Someone over at the CDC just decided was important. Do any of these four choices provide reliable protection? Do people really believe that Fauci and the CDC are calibrating their advice to the newest scientific findings? CDC reviewed the mask research back in 2014 after it badly bungled the PPE recommendations for Ebola. I discussed CDC's many flip-flops regarding droplets and aerosol spread in 2014. CDC is pulling the correct social distance out of thin air, since there is no effective distance if you're indoors along with some airborne virus. The World Health Organization says 3 feet, but if the CDC uses 3 feet, kids could all go back to school. Then parents could go back to work. Then the economy could restart. And someone doesn't want that to happen. The CDC just released its long-awaited guidance on reopening schools, but CNBC says following it would keep 90% of schools at least partially closed. Who's fooling who? New viral variants are coming, so be afraid. Oh, they're already here. Oh, they've been here since last October. They are not more lethal, just more infectious. Be less afraid. But they do reduce vaccine and antibody effectiveness. Get ready for more vaccines. Rush out and get your vaccine now. There's a shortage. In many businesses, nursing homes, hospitals, employees are being threatened with job loss to stimulate vaccine uptake. Why are people already who have had COVID being given the shots when they cannot do any good and might even put the recipients at greater risk for immune-mediated vaccine-induced harm? Why has CDC covered this up and lied about it? Why the rush to vaccinate the elderly when new vaccines will supposedly be needed for the new variants? And the elderly seem to be expiring at very high rates post-vaccination. And we don't even know the vaccine's efficacy in the frail elderly who were never tested in the clinical trials. Nor do we know the vaccine's safety in this group. Many vaccines fail to stimulate immunity in the elderly. And some vaccines have even made the recipient more susceptible to the diseases they were supposed to prevent. Where is the proof that the COVID vaccines aren't doing the same thing or doing it in older age groups? And why in heaven's name are the media, government, and industry pushing out the same story about the frightening mutants when there is very little evidence to support the scare? For example, the Financial Times titled a February 5th story, quote, Britain risks becoming virus melting pot as mutants spread, end quote. Yet the British Medical Journal tells us that deaths, hospitalizations, and cases have been falling dramatically in the United Kingdom over the past month, similar to the United States. From February 20th, the Los Angeles Times, quote, Dr. Monica Gonde, an infectious disease specialist, put it simply, try not to worry about the variants, end quote. Chloroquine and its cousin, deoxychloroquine, sinking the magic bullet. Chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine are licensed generic drugs, which any doctor is free to prescribe off-label for any valid reason, with patient acquiescence. I routinely prescribe hydroxychloroquine for lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, Lyme's disease, and now COVID. I found it to be very safe and estimate I have used it in 200 patients. In 2005, the Virology Journal, the most respected journal of its type, published an article that said chloroquine killed SARS-1 coronavirus in tissue culture. In fact, the CDC scientist did the experiment and wrote the article. Here is their final paragraph. Quote, chloroquine, a relatively safe, effective, and cheap drug used for treating many human diseases, including malaria and human immunodeficiency virus, is effective in inhibiting the infection and spread of SARS-CoV in cell culture. The fact the drug has significant inhibitory antiviral effects when the susceptible cell were treated either prior or after getting infection suggest a possible prophylactic and therapeutic use, end quote. Then suddenly, chloroquine drugs were too dangerous to use, more likely to kill you than coronavirus. What happened? A lot more than Trump's praise. Two very terrible things happened. Two deadly medical frauds. The fact that Trump recommended the chloroquines was only a sideshow, used to confuse those who were not paying close attention. A number of clinical trials were set up to force hydroxychloroquine to fail in treating COVID. The more benign of these trials simply used the drug too late, after virus was no longer multiplying in the body. This happens about a week after the onset of symptoms. At that point, you need steroids, blood thinners, and other medications to combat the downstream autoimmune effects of the virus. Trying to kill the virus when there is no intact virus doesn't work at that point. The drug appears to be ineffective, but had it been given a week earlier, its efficacy would have been obvious to all. The more malignant of these trials set out to poison patients with potentially lethal doses of hydroxychloroquine. Largest among these trials was Recovery, sponsored by the United Kingdom government, Oxford University's, and the Gates Foundation and the Wellcome Trust, that's Burroughs Wellcome ACT, among others. And also Solidarity, sponsored by the World Health Organization, the Gates Foundation, and others. I have delved deeply into the doses here. In the hydroxychloroquine arm of the Recovery trial, over 25% of the patients died, 396. The Solidarity hydroxychloroquine trial had similar results and shut down 3 days after I warned World Health Organization officials that their failure to disclose the subjects they were being given a known potentially lethal treatment dose left the World Health Organization liable for damages. Yet despite using poisonous doses, these trials continue to be cited as evidence of the dangerousness and lack of efficacy of hydroxychloroquine, even by otherwise highly capable scientists who simply failed to pay attention to the doses used. The second terrible thing that tanked the use of chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine was a fabricated journal article in The Lancet, published May 22, 2020. The article purported to have access to phenomenal real-time database with information from over 600 hospitals on six continents, including both medical and financial records, in many different languages. Had any editor, ever heard of such a database previously? Of course not, because nothing like it exists. But a Harvard professor was the paper's first author. The paper supposedly sailed through peer review, and a massive media blitz sounded forth on the day of publication. The blitz announced to almost everyone in the world listening to radio or television that day that hydroxychloroquine and its cousin, hydroxychloroquine, could kill patients. And then it gives examples. And then it goes on to the Atlantic publication, co-founded the COVID tracking project last March because of the totally inadequate data being released by the states and CDC. It quickly became the go-to site for data on COVID, better than federal data or any other site sponsored by John Hopkins. On a shoestring at first, this team put together an amazing good data collection independently called from the states and municipalities because that was what was needed. However, significant data accuracy problems remain and persist to the present. The problem is that we do not have reliable tests for COVID in the United States. And by the way, here's what we do know, and this is not her speaking, it's me. I have interviewed many doctors and scientists who say that the dose that you should use hydroxychloroquine is 200 to 400 milligrams every other day with zinc and azithromycin, an antibiotic. Ivermectin, 3 milligrams a day, prophylactically, and 5 to 15 if you are infected. And you could reduce by almost 90% people going to the hospital or dying. But how much were they actually giving? Well, it's cumulative, up to 10,000 milligrams. At that level, when you're in ICU, you're on a ventilator, you're going to die. So how could anyone, in my opinion, be so irresponsible that you'd be giving a lethal dose to thousands of people and not see that you should be giving it a very low dose? Oh, we have an example of that. Yeah, hundreds of thousands died by taking 1,600 milligrams of AZT a day. Otherwise, healthy people who were HIV positive died everywhere. Was anybody called to account for that? Nobody. Nobody for all those wrongful deaths. Same thing is happening now. So those two articles had to be retracted. Did the American media go on the fact that two false articles were retracted that tried to condemn hydroxychloroquine? So had we been using hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin and vitamin D and zinc and vitamin C since the beginning, this wouldn't be a pandemic. This wouldn't be an epidemic. This would have been dealt with a long time ago. Yeah, she's right. You've been played. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to go to a call now, and we'd like to see what you have to say on this topic. And we have on the line right now, we have Jody. Hi, Jody, your turn.
Hello there, Gary. I've known you since the mid-80s, and I always want to thank you for getting me into running. I did a marathon after a year and a half. I thought I'd never be able to do it. But anyway, looking forward to your resuming the walking and running club someday. I wanted to start on this very snowy day in New York with a positive story. My mom was always a pretty health-conscious person. She didn't have a Gary Nall to listen to. It was more Carlton Fredericks back in the day. But she would listen to John McDougall. She was based in Berkeley and Oakland. And it was when I took her to a community vegetarian community festival in Berkeley when she met him. And at the age of 82, she became a vegetarian. She would proudly say till the end of her life, I'm a vegan. And she didn't go to doctors. She didn't suffer pain until the end of her life when she died close to 90. So just wanted to say it's never too late to change. Even in your early 80s.
I agree. And thank you very much. I remember you. And thank you for calling in and sharing. And yes, when the pandemic is over, and that will probably be when they've made as much money as possible, then suddenly overnight, oh, we have herd immunity and it's all over. You don't have to do anything. We'll be resuming, it looks like, in the late spring or early summer, the running and walking club, getting people ready for the next marathon. Okay. I appreciate you calling in. Let's say hello to James. James from New York, your turn.
This is James Colonna. So Americans won't change because the demonic investment is such that they're invested in and given feeling of pleasure and left alone. So they continue in this, building the feeling that they are righteous without knowing they are supporting an unimaginable pain for others and themselves, and will become themselves on another. As they are shielded from this and depleted, having first been coaxed to take on this poison from vaccines and bad feeding habits from when they were little, they get more angry and lash out at all those who are innocent, and then further facilitating these demons on a spiritual and physical level, going into the negative unknown of life and becoming brain unconscious. The demonic investment made them think there was everything more simple than it was. And in the end, this is the schizophrenic state who duped them all around, whoever it was at the highest level of demonic possession.
Okay, and I don't consider this demonic. This is not demons. This is human beings who never are responsible for the outcome of their choices. Right now, today, James, there are about 21 million, more or less, people in one community in a relatively small area at the south end of the Arabian Peninsula that Saudi Arabia started a war with 6 years ago. The United States has supplied the planes, the munitions, the intelligence, all the data necessary, including the ships to blockade food and medicines from getting in. This is the CIA. This is the Defense Department. This is the Obama White House, Hillary Clinton White House, Joe Biden White House, and the Trump White House. And it wouldn't matter. You could have gone back George Bush. It would have been the same thing, because whoever gives you the money, the country, suddenly them throwing gays off building is not a problem. Then them beheading women who are considered a threat because of their activist positions is not a problem. They're starving and denying the Shia, the minority in their group, and seeing that they're killed in large numbers is not a problem. You see what happens, how you can clean up a really bad image as long as you're putting money into lobbyists' hands and consultants' hands. And so suddenly everyone's your friend. Oh, yeah, they killed some guy. What was his name? And then, yeah, they cut up his body in a place over there in Turkey. But, hey, you know, nobody's perfect. No, no, this is these people are as evil as you could be. And yet we do business with them. Right now, this week, there was an effort to try to get more munitions sold to this country. We've sold tens of hundreds of billions of dollars. So you've got all these people behind the scenes who don't think of the consequence. Now, we call that being a sociopath, where you do not have any empathy or feelings for that which you are causing in the way of suffering to others. And now when you don't care about the suffering of a chicken, a fish, a dog, a cat, well, yes, hold on, you do care about the dog and a cat. It's your dog and a cat. You sleep with it, you pet it, you know, it's part of the family. But what if someone came up and says, I'm going to buy your dog from you or your cat because we want to barbecue it? Well, no, you're not. But you're barbecuing, you know, a pig. Pig's smarter than a dog. You see, we live by contradictions, the duality of a lost sense of spiritual values. I appreciate your call, James. And remember, unless I miss something, there has not been a single march in the United States by any group to feed the people, to end the blockade, to put pressure upon the White House, end the blockade, stop all support of this war, and end it tomorrow, and then go in there and help rebuild the country that we were responsible. We, the American public, many little Pontius Pilates, we caused that suffering because our tax dollars is spent that way. All members of Congress know this. When was the last time one of them spoke up? Those gutless cowards. So, I appreciate your call. Denise from Brooklyn. Your turn, Denise.
First of all, thank you for your program. It's so excellent. We greatly appreciate you. You know, I want to say that first of all. Pertaining to a health-oriented daily practice, I find that many people find it very challenging because of the time that they need to invest in order to do even a juice. I had developed a quick way to do juicing in about 9 minutes. But it's not a product. I tried to market it, and it's not a product that you would buy a lot because you can simply wash it in order to use it over again. And so it wasn't so popular. I'm looking into it now to market. But what I've found is that most people do not do healthy practices, daily practices, because, one, they can't keep their fruits and vegetables fresh because they're not able or they don't understand how to juice in a time-effective way. I've known people who take almost an hour to an 18-ounce glass of juice, and it dissuaded them, you know. But there are people who are trying to develop products such as myself that don't cost a lot and that are not going to be making a lot of money for the producer, but and it's very difficult to get them on the market. I'm experiencing that myself. So
then do this. I understand what you're saying, Denise. I'm willing to help anybody out there. In fact, we can probably in the next 2 weeks do a conference call where if you have an idea for any product or anything, and I want nothing for it, it's my gift to you, and I'll see if I can help some of you who have some original ideas that get your ideas and products out into the marketplace. I'm a big supporter of people with original ideas. So keep listening, and you can contact my office at 646-926-5422 and ask to speak with Jessica, and just put your name on a list. So when that day comes, and it'll probably take an hour or 2 hours, I'll have Glenn, my IT person, do a conference call number that you would get, and then I'll be able to hear your idea and then show you and wherever possible help you get that invention or product, whatever it is, made and out there. Because I've been successful in my life, not because of my health knowledge, not because of my PhD in human nutrition or public health science or all the other things in my background, but because I first went to business school and graduated from Mount State College. Had I not done that, nothing else in my career would have mattered, because when the industry went against me, meaning the cattle industry, the dairy industry, and every other industry, because I was the only one out there debating him. Nobody would debate these people, especially on national television. And almost all these, I was on Oprah many times, all these were all public debates for 20 years. That closes doors, doesn't open them, closes them. You know, you may have right and truth on your side, and now you have no economic advantage at all. And so they try to strangle people financially. What we need is a nation where the great, unique minds, and we have tens of millions of those minds, don't be afraid to bring your ideas forth into the marketplace. Don't think that because Google and Facebook and all these major corporation monopolies have all the platforms and have all the ideas and all the people working for them, that you can't do it also. There's always room in this world for unique and wonderful idea, and especially one that helps people with their health, that gets 5 stars after its rating. So we'll do something about this. All right, Denise?
Thank you. And you have 10 stars in the universe. You are just so special. Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye.
Have a good day.
I want to give you this also, and this is important. A new study published in Spain shows that vitamin D3, and given to hospitalized patients with PCR-confirmed DBD test, in addition to standard care, reduced the ICU admissions by 82% and death by 64%. Just taking vitamin D. There's other research shows vitamin D is contributing to COVID, lack of COVID infectivity. And 18 European countries literally correlate with latitude, and hence they're not getting enough sun. Others get enough sun. You got to get the sunlight. You got to take the supplement, but it reduces death. All right? That's a big deal, and that's the latest. The study included 930 patients, and 551 of whom received vitamin D3, and not even a lot, 532 micrograms on the first day of admission and 266 micrograms days 3, 7, 15, and 30. And the rest were served as a control. And they came up with these results. That's a huge amount of people's lives would be so saved. Huge amount of deaths that wouldn't occur for something as simple as vitamin D3. Get 5,000 units a day now into your body, all right, every day, because it can save your life. Take zinc also and some other things, but that's a simple and easy one that we can all do. I also want to mention that coming up this Sunday, big day, not one but two films, the brand new really good film on saving people's lives and keeping them alive in a healthy state if they have AIDS, and the proof that this occurred. And then there's a panel discussion with an outstanding group of scientists and physicians. And then following that, the most comprehensive videos anywhere in the world on mainstream orthodox scientists and physicians challenging the COVID narrative and showing that the same things we did wrong on the war on AIDS, we're doing wrong on the war on COVID. And who headed the war on AIDS? Anthony Fauci. Who's heading the war on COVID? Anthony Fauci. So at least the people who attend that workshop, I'll be a part of that, will get the truth, and then they'll have it permanently. Go to GaryNall.com. It's a new website we put up with lots of articles and videos. And also, or call our office at 646-926-5422. It'll be a webinar. So we look forward to seeing you then. This is very important information that you would not have had. And it can literally save people's lives, because we have tens of millions of people with AIDS around the world. There's no reason, if we know there's a cure, and there is a cure, and successful treatment, and there is successful treatments, that we shouldn't be demanding it. But the media helps stop that. Special interest groups getting money help stop that message from getting out. All this is uncovered by the Society for Investigative Independent Journalism, and Celia Farr will be narrating it, one of the world's finest investigative journalists. That's Sunday noon. You don't want to miss it, GaryNall.com. We have to say goodbye right now to our WBI audience, but I'm staying on for another 5 minutes because we've got more calls. I want to hear from more people out there. And so if you have something you'd like to share with us, we'd like to hear from you. And let's see, we just spoke with Denise. Vincent from New Jersey. Hi, Vincent. Your turn.
Gary, can you hear me?
You got static on your line.
Got what?
Your connection is staticky.
How's this?
That's better.
Okay, I just wanted to say I think we're a society of we have a death wish or something. We're not looking out for our own best interests. We make all the wrong choices only because, as a Christian Scientist, I see it as having a mindset of sin, disease, and death, rather than, you know, looking to have the mind of Christ and to do unto others as we would have them do unto us, and to be merciful, just, and pure.
Okay, now let's just say that you were not a Christian Scientist. You were even an atheist, all right? Or you were a person who was not an atheist or an agnostic, but you were a person who was uncertain. Listen to what you just said. You said follow the teachings of Christ, but let's go one step further. Let's say that you're a person, a highly educated person who believes that anybody who is a person of faith is a stupid, superstitious fool. That's the Dawkins, Richard Dawkins atheist group. And those are the skeptics that control Wikipedia. But let's just say that you're one of those people. Would they agree or disagree that you should not kill people? You should treat people as you would want to be treated. You should not steal from people or betray people. You should not covet other people's partners. You should respect that that's not your relationship, it's theirs. Respect that. That you should not try to profit at someone else's loss, that you'd always try to take a high moral stance. And you could be completely an atheist, and would any of those separate you from a person that believes deeply in a religion? If both of you are believing in treating people with respect, honoring all life matters, all suffering should be dealt with, all the people who are poor, who need help, seek some way that you can lessen their discomfort and give them the grace of your being. So you see, don't wrap anything in a religion. Wrap it in the spiritual notion of living a moral life.
Yes, I did say to have the mind of Christ. I didn't say the teachings of Christ. Actually,
right.
To think as Christ thought. And that's okay, what you're saying. Those people as agnostics, they're thinking as Christ thought. They have the mind of Christ.
If you argue with them, they'll say, well, there were 29 to 33 different Christs that were born of Immaculate Conception and you get out of that. But
mind.
Just it is one mind. Look, it doesn't matter whether Christ was the real spiritual figure, Son of God. Doesn't matter whether he was a historical figure, but not the son of anything. Other than his parents and their teaching and the Essene teaching and the supposed Indian teaching he received in his missing years of travels. He could be an allegorical figure, he could be a real figure, or he could be a historical figure. The message is the same. It's like Martin Luther King. It's like Malcolm X. And by the way, I'm very pleased that Malcolm X family daughters are suing to get a new criminal investigation into the actual cause of death and the actual killers that many of us have believed were no different than Martin Luther King's assassination, in that we were not given the full truth on it. In any case, you start looking at what did some great people say? What did Maimonides say? What did Eurydicles say? Sophocles? Socrates? You don't have to believe that they were anything other than a human being. Their statements have lived for thousands of years, and a truth that is universal is timeless. So when we think of the hardships in life, we look back at the people who were remarkable in how they dealt with hardships, and we try to embrace that ethos of, if they went through that suffering, I can go through the suffering. When Joseph Issels told me, the German doctor, the best cancer doctor in history, and when he told me that he survived the brutal Siberian death camps of the Russians, he was a physician. He was not a soldier. He didn't carry a weapon. But they had him in there, and all the other officers, it was for officers, all of them, except I think two or three, starved to death. He would go out each day, and he said, thank you for allowing me to continue my fast. And he used everything against him for him. Well, that is a universal timeless message of what you do in the face of crisis. You do not surrender to the pathology of a dismal and fatalistic thought. You transform yourself in that moment and allow the real hero that Joseph Campbell spoke about to emerge to guide you to a more enlightened place. That's the purpose of all the great thinkers throughout history. Thank you very much for bringing that to our attention. I appreciate it. We're out of time, everyone. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.